Chapter 14. The doctor released Clyde from the infirmary and sent him to the chow hall, where he found the rest of the trainees. Gil's eyes lit up when he saw him. He put his beefy arm around his neck and said, "Hey, here he is back from the dead! Welcome back!" The other trainees slapped his back and rubbed the top of his head. Clyde couldn't keep from smiling. "Thanks, fellas," he said. "Go easy on the head. I still got a headache." Gil said, "I'm surprised you still have a head. When you hit that tower, it sounded like a rifle shot."
"Yeah, the doc said I was lucky. Seeing you hanging there after. Everyone thought you'd bought it for sure. You looked dead. How'd they get me down?"
Private Oliver said, "Those paratroopers scaled that tower like a bunch of damn monkeys. They set up a belay line and had you down fast. Ambulance carted you off, but everyone thought you were a goner."
Oliver touched the lump on Clyde's head, making him wince.
"They called off tower practice for the rest of the day after that."
Gil added,
"No one much wanted to go after seeing what happened to you."
Clyde said, "Way too damn windy up there. I knew it." Gil lowered his voice and the rest of the trainees leaned in closer.
"We heard some serious ass chewing. Lieutenant Harrison got reamed out by Captain Marco, and a Harrison reamed out Sergeant Quinn. Seemed like no one knew what the hell happened. Everyone the blaming everyone else."
Clyde asked, "Anyone else see that leg officer that approached Lieutenant Harrison right before?" Blank stares and shaking heads greeted him. "I forgot about it until right now. But that's when Harrison said go ahead, right after hearing from that guy." Private Gutierrez slapped him on the back again.
"All's I know is it's good to have the old man back."
A few hours later, Clyde found himself standing in front of the 250-foot towers again. The instructors hadn't mentioned the Wednesday incident. They acted as though nothing had happened. Clyde didn't expect special treatment, but he thought they might at least bring it up. Clyde watched for the mysterious officer who'd spoken with Lieutenant Harrison before, but he only saw airborne officers and NCOs. The flag on top of the tower barely fluttered. Today felt much different than the day before, but Clyde still didn't feel at ease. The instructors droned on about what would happen and what they would be expected to do. Every time Clyde glanced at the towers, he remembered the terrifying feeling of being pushed inexorably toward the metal. He felt a fear that he hadn't felt before. It worried him. "Can I do this again?" A few men went up, released, and descended without incident. Each man sprang up, totally energized at what they'd just done. Clyde could see their joy and exuberance, but he only felt dread and fear. Then they called his name. He trotted woodenly toward the technical sergeant, who guided the harness down. As the technical sergeant helped him hook up, Clyde stared at the tower he'd slammed into a few days before. He could feel the fear growing deep in the pit of his stomach. The first time, he hadn't felt any fear. But that was before he'd almost cracked his head open. He hyperventilated, and his heart rate increased uncomfortably. He closed his eyes, willing himself to calm down.
"Damn it," he cursed to himself. "Get control of yourself. Knock it off."
The sergeant noticed his closed eyes. He shook the risers, and Clyde opened them and saw the sergeant staring hard at him.
"Get control of it, Cooper. You'll be fine."
Clyde remembered the same sergeant saying the same thing the day before. He wanted to curse and spit, but the sergeant said,
"There's hardly any wind today. You did all you could last time. This'll be nothing for you."
He winked at him as though letting him in on a joke. Clyde felt better. At least someone acknowledged what had happened. He felt the fear dissipating. He nodded and said,
"Okay, let's get this over with. I'm ready."
Once Clyde was at the top, the PA system blared, "Pull your ribbon!" Clyde held it out in front. The wind swirled, but today it felt pleasant. It didn't have a bite to it, or the power to kill him.
"Drop the ribbon!"
It fluttered toward the tower, but barely. He realized that the doctor had been right. The damn ribbon always went toward the tower.
"Ready?"
He nodded and yelled, "Yes!" He heard the thunk overhead, and he felt the jolt as the parachute dropped and filled. He looked at the tower fearfully, but this time he floated straight down. Then, instead of abject fear, he felt joy. The pit in his stomach changed to giddiness. He pulled on the risers, feeling the parachutes respond immediately and effectively. "Prepare for PLF!" the speakers roared. He flexed his legs, not wanting the ride to end so soon. He slammed into the ground and rolled onto his side in the grass and dirt. A sergeant holding a bullhorn approached and yelled, "Good job, Cooper!" He marked something off on the clipboard. "Now get back in line and do it again!" He unclipped, and two men hauled the parachute off to be reassembled. He trotted back to the group. Gil said,
"Well, that was much better, Coop."
"Yeah, you're telling me." Gil leaned in close.
"Were you scared?"
Clyde nodded quickly.
"Hell yes."
The weekend seemed to drag for Clyde. He wrote letters to his parents and to Abby. He pored over newspapers about the recent Allied surrender on the Bataan Peninsula. Was his brother one of the dead, or one of the captured? Were those the only two choices? Letters from his parents said they'd heard nothing, which they still took as good news. The tiny fortress island of Corregidor still continued to hold out, but no one thought they could for long without a resupply. He hoped his brother still fought the Japanese from there, but he had no way to know for sure. He felt frustrated. Now that he was nearly a paratrooper, he wanted to make a difference. He pictured himself, along with the rest of the airborne, being dropped behind the Japanese lines on the Bataan Peninsula and wiping the Japanese out. He knew it was a fantasy, but it helped with the feelings of helplessness. At least now he was actually learning how to fight. Monday morning finally dawned, and after chow, they loaded the buses that took them back to Lawson Field. The sky was clear, and the day promised to be warmer than the day before. A perfect day to jump from an airplane, he thought wistfully. As soon as they exited the bus, Clyde noticed a new energy in the training cadre. The instructors barked at them as though they were new recruits. They lined them up and marched them into the rigger hangars, where they retrieved their parachutes. Clyde checked over his parachute with extra care. He knew he'd packed it well. He felt confident that every fold and every line had been perfect when he'd locked it in there the evening before. The tower incident had stuck in his craw. He still wondered about that mystery officer who'd spoken with Harrison. Why'd they put me on the upwind side? Coincidence? No one really seemed to know what had happened, and he decided he wouldn't leave anything to chance. If someone wanted to hurt him, messing with his parachute would be an obvious choice. He found nothing out of the ordinary, though. The instructors watched them closely as they strapped into their harnesses and cinched them as tightly as they could manage. They formed lines, and the PTR cadre went through each of their setups, cursing their ineptness. They tightened everything to excruciating levels. Clyde heard Gil complain, "I can't breathe!" A delighted PTR trainer grinned. "That means it's tight enough. Move along to the sweatshed, turd!" Clyde went through the same treatment. He'd worn all the gear before, but now the tightness made it nearly impossible to walk normally. He shuffled his way into the shed along with the other men from his stick. He immediately began to sweat profusely as the sweatshed earned its name. No air moved inside, and the Georgia sun pounded on the metal walls and heated the place like an oven. Other sticks of men sat on long benches. No one looked comfortable. Pools of sweat formed at their feet as it dripped from their noses and splashed on the concrete floor. Clyde thought he felt it pooling in his jump boots. "Or perhaps I'm bleeding," he thought. The massive hangar door opened and a PTR sergeant yelled, "Sticks 1 and 2, stand up!" Clyde was in stick 3, so he watched the others stagger to their feet, looking miserable. They shuffled through the hangar doors side by side. Beyond them, Clyde glimpsed the dull green C-47s parked in rows nearby. He'd seen them many times before, but today they looked sinister. The doors shut, blocking any airflow. A few minutes later, the sound of engines starting shook the walls. Dust seeped through the gaps in the door. Clyde gulped. The men who'd sat here only minutes before were about to take off. They'd be next. Fear suddenly gripped him. He would jump from an airplane soon. He closed his eyes and tried to breathe his way through the heat and discomfort. We've been through worse, he told himself.
Sticks 3 and 4, stand up!
Clyde stood and wobbled. He worried he might fall over. If he did, he'd be like a beetle on his back. The image made him laugh, and Gil gave him an exasperated look.
Put on your helmets!
Clyde did so, and with great effort, snapped the chin strap. His tight reserve chute restricted his movements greatly. He could hardly reach across his chest. How the hell will I be able to hustle to the plane? He wondered. The hangar doors slid open again, and he saw that the first few C-47s were no longer parked there.
Sticks 3 and 4, forward!
They didn't move fast, but they did move. When they exited the stifling sweatshed, another PTR cadre pointed to their waiting steed.
Go! Get aboard!
He slapped a few shoulders as they waddled past. Clyde wondered if they looked as ridiculous as he felt. He gripped the handrails and strained his way up the short set of stairs and into the C-47. The jumpmaster helped them inside and directed them to the seats.
Sit down!
Clyde sat and watched his stick fill the plane. 20 men, packed shoulder to shoulder like herring. A calmness overtook him. This felt different from the C-47 mock-up. The engines roared to life. The noise thundered in his ears, and he wondered if he'd be able to hear the jumpmaster's commands. He hadn't thought it would be so damn loud. They taxied, and the jostling motion rocked them side to side. The jumpmaster had on a set of headphones. He yelled above the din,
"You all know what to do! This'll happen quick! Remember, this is a tap-out jump! I'll yell go and tap your leg! When you feel the tap, that's when you go!"
They'd already briefed them on this, but Clyde was grateful for the reminder. The plane slowed, then pivoted abruptly. The engines roared, and Clyde could feel the plane wanting to leap from the blocks. Finally, the brakes released, and the plane trundled down the runway, then lifted into the air. The transition from the ground to flight brought a smile to Clyde's face. What a wonder, he thought. I'm flying! My first ever plane ride! As the lumbering plane slowly gained altitude, the jumpmaster yelled,
"Get ready!"
So soon? Clyde remembered that the field they'd jump into was close by. Clyde went through the motions automatically. He unhooked the snap fastener from the reserve carrying loop and held it in his right hand. The red light flicked on, and the jumpmaster yelled,
"Stand up!"
Clyde stood and held the cable with his left hand. He faced the back of the plane and the gaping door and realized he'd be the third man out, right behind Gil and Lieutenant McPherson.
"Hook up!"
Clyde fastened the snap fastener, yanked on it, then secured it with a cotter pin.
"Check equipment!"
Clyde went through Gil's gear as Private Oliver behind him went through his. It all looked perfect. Nothing untoward had happened to the pack over the past 20 minutes. He hoped to God no one had messed with his chute.
"Sound off equipment check!"
The checkoff started from the front of the plane and moved back steadily. When it got to Clyde, he called out,
"3, okay!"
With the final call-out, the jumpmaster asked,
"Is everybody happy?"
A few voices cracked with fear, but most of the stick yelled,
"Yeah! Stand in the door!"
Private Gil Hicks stepped forward and moved into position behind McPherson. Clyde sidled up right behind him. The light turned from red to green.
"Go!"
McPherson disappeared. Clyde shuffled forward, staying as close to Gil as possible.
"Go!"
Gil exited, and Clyde quickly moved into place. He felt the wind from the prop blast smack into his face. Both hands now gripped the doorframe, and the toes of his left foot hung in space. He fought the urge to look down.
"Go!"
He felt the slap on his leg, and he pushed out and spun a quarter turn. He felt the prop blast slam into his back. He felt as though he jumped into a swirling river and was being pulled toward the bottom. He remembered to count, and by the time he got to 2, he felt a harsh smack, which caused him to grunt out loud. His balls ached with the tightness of the harness. He strained to look up, having to force his helmet to slide past the taut risers. His canopy looked fully inflated and stunningly beautiful. Elation swept over him before he remembered to look around for other parachutists. He slipped forward, then back, then right, then left. He grasped the left front risers with his right hand and the right rear risers with his left hand and pulled. Almost like magic, he faced right. They'd practiced the maneuver countless times on the suspension lines, but he couldn't believe how much easier it worked in real life. Everything seemed easier up here. He stifled a whoop. Before he was ready, the ground approached. He remembered his training, found the horizon, and held the front risers firmly. He pulled on them and drifted forward. He pressed his feet together, bent his knees, and waited for impact. It came as he was sliding right, and he folded onto the grass and dirt and rolled upright. The canopy collapsed like a huge bursting bubble. He looked around as more and more parachutes deflated all around him. He unhooked the harness from the chute and rolled up his parachute, hefted it on his shoulder, and trotted his way off the field. He couldn't stop grinning. One down and four to go, he thought gleefully. Clyde packed his chute inside the massive rigger's hangar under the watchful eye of veteran paratroopers who specialized in the process. He just completed his fourth jump and would do the fifth and final jump that night. Gil finished packing his chute, stowed it in his locker, and came over to Clyde, who just finished packing his own.
"Hurry the hell up, Clyde! I'm hungry!"
Clyde shook his head and said, "You're always hungry, Gil." He hefted the packed parachute and plopped it down in front of the technical sergeant in charge of checking their work. The sergeant inspected it and nodded his approval.
"Good job! Stow it in your locker!"
Clyde hefted it, and Gil followed him back to the lockers. Clyde opened the combination lock, then carefully stowed it inside. He said, "Can you believe this is the last time we'll have to pack these?" He closed the lock and spun the dial. Gil smiled and slapped his back.
"Yeah, after tonight, we'll be real paratroopers."
He set it low to keep the trainers from overhearing. "These guys will do the packing for us." He thumbed over his shoulder at the men wearing the silver parachute wings. "I'm not sure how I feel about that. I enjoy packing my own chute," Clyde said. "Those guys are pros. They've forgotten more about it than we'll ever know. Still, I feel better relying on myself. What if they're tired or they're mad at their girl? What if they're distracted? Like I said, they're pros. By definition, they don't get distracted." "Anyone can make a mistake."
"Lighten up, Clyde. You've got the one more jump, and you packed your own chute for it. Relax."
He put his arm around Gil and said, "I'm not sure I'll be able to eat. Aren't you nervous for this last one?"
"Nervous? Nah. Why?"
"Well, for one, it's at night." Gil teased.
"It'll make it even easier. We want to see what we're about to land on."
Clyde laughed too hard, and Gil added,
"Besides, if we ever actually have a combat jump, it would make sense that it'd be at night. I don't like the thought of being dropped in daylight over Krauts or Japs. They'd have a duck shoot."
"Don't forget about the IDs," Clyde said, then added, "although none of them can hit the broadside of a barn." Gil hit him hard on the shoulder.
"Watch your mouth, stupido."
A few hours after chow, they formed up and marched back toward the rigger station to pick up their parachutes. Clyde looked up and saw a clear sky sparkling with stars.
"Wow, beautiful night for a jump."
Gil agreed.
"Yep. In a few hours, we'll be genuine paratroopers." "Don't jinx it, you stupid wop," hissed Oliver, trotting behind him.
Gil barked back.
"They'll probably make you do it twice, Ollie. You're too stupid to be a paratrooper."
"Well, we are jumping out of perfectly good airplanes, after all," he fired back. Lieutenant McPherson raised his voice.
"Shut up back there!"
They streamed into the now familiar rigger hangar and went to their lockers. Clyde worked the lock combination and pulled. Nothing happened. He tried the combination again and again. Nothing happened. Panic and embarrassment flashed through him as the others pulled out their gear. He tried the combination again, this time slow and steady, making sure of each number. The lock refused to open. He hunched close to examine the lock. It looked the same, and he was certainly at the correct locker. He racked his brain, seeing the memorized numbers in his head, clearly. He tried again, and again it wouldn't open. A hard squeeze on his shoulder brought him back to his feet.
"What's the problem, Cooper?"
Technical Sergeant Mulvaney asked with an edge to his voice.
I can't get my lock open, Sergeant."
"Christ, Cooper!
If you can't remember a simple lock combination, how the hell will you remember how to kill the enemy?
Clyde didn't have an answer.
Maybe 25 push-ups will jog your memory.
Clyde dropped and immediately started pumping up push-ups. When he recovered, he thought hard and still came up with the same three numbers.
Mulvaney took the lock and said, "Tell me."
Left to 3, right to 10, left to 16. Mulvaney shook his head.
"That ain't it, Cooper."
Clyde's face reddened. "I know that's correct, Sergeant." Mulvaney squared his broad shoulders to him and placed his fist against his hips.
"Well, it obviously ain't right. We'll cut the damn thing off, but you'll owe Uncle Sam a new lock, soldier."
"Yes, Sergeant." A corporal brought over a heavy bolt cutter and did the honors, snapping the metal clasp with ease. Clyde grabbed his harness, parachute, and reserve. He spread them on a table and looked them over.
Sergeant Mulvaney's eyes bugged out and he barked, "Get that harness and parachute on now, Cooper! We ain't got all night to wait for your slow ass!"
"Yes, Sergeant!" Clyde bellowed. With the corporal and Sergeant Mulvaney breathing down his neck, Clyde quickly attached the equipment. Like all the other jumps, they'd be jumping with their full gear besides the parachutes. Despite feeling rushed, Clyde went through the mental checklist methodically. When he finally finished and Mulvaney felt satisfied, he joined his stick at the door. Gil asked,
"What the hell happened to you? Thought you went AWOL."
"I couldn't get my damn locker open. They had to cut the lock off." Gil laughed.
"Boy, you really are nervous. This'll be a piece of cake."
"I wish I had time to repack my chute." Gil looked over his shoulder at him quizzically.
"What the hell are you talking about? Why?"
"I didn't forget my lock combination. No way. That had to be a different lock."
"You're paranoid. You must have gotten the numbers messed up in your head. It's not the first lock that's had to be cut off."
Before Clyde could say anything else, Lieutenant McPherson ordered,
"All right, men, that's our ride. Let's go."
The men trotted from the hangar and approached a hulking C-47. The 100 pounds of gear hanging from Clyde made the short jog painful as edges dug into his legs and back. He hefted himself up the short stairway to the inside of the plane and found his seat beside Gil. Although they'd done this 4 other times over the past 2 days, the darkness made it feel much different. More oppressive somehow. The seats filled with Clyde's stick. A feeling of excitement permeated the group, but Clyde couldn't shake the uneasy feeling deep in his gut. He felt crushed between the overly laden soldiers. Claustrophobic. The engines sputtered to life. The incredible noise took his mind off his parachute for a moment. The plane rumbled along as it taxied. The engines revved and the noise increased. Clyde shut his eyes. "Nothing I can do about it now," he thought. "If I don't jump, they'll think I've lost my nerve and they'll kick me out." The plane lurched forward, gaining speed steadily, and soon left the ground. Clyde heard the solid thump as the gear retracted into the underside of the wings. He fingered the metal pull tag of his reserve chute, praying he wouldn't have to use it. His mind reeled with indecision.
"This is crazy," he thought. "I should tell the jumpmaster, ask him to give my gear a once-over."
But he knew he wouldn't be able to see much in the darkness. And besides, if someone had sabotaged it, they wouldn't make it obvious. His rational mind interjected.
"Sabotage? Preposterous. Who would want to sabotage his parachute, and why?"
He felt better momentarily. Then, in his mind, he saw the mysterious officer speaking with Lieutenant Harrison again, right before he'd nearly cracked his skull on the tower. He reached for the right side of his paratrooper pants. He'd stuffed his oversized cargo pockets with gear of all types. He found the little cord he'd attached. He pulled and felt his wedding band pop out and dangle. He couldn't see it, but the smooth surface reminded him of Abby. Reminded him of his life, still waiting for him back home. His mind cleared, and he pictured her walking through a meadow holding a picnic basket and laughing as she led him toward the edge of a dazzlingly clear river.
"Stand up!"
The image faded, but his mind remained sharp and clear. He opened his eyes and stood automatically.
"Hook up!"
He hooked to the metal static line running the length of the plane. He felt ready for anything. "If something goes wrong, I know what to do," he thought. He fingered the reserve chute pull tab. He noticed the glowing red light. Any moment now, he'd hurl himself from the plane.
Equipment check!
He checked his equipment as carefully as possible. Everything he could check looked good. He checked the man in front of him. All good.
Sound off!
The call went down the line. The jumpmaster yelled, "Everybody happy?" Clyde couldn't make himself yell. He stuffed his wedding ring back into his front pocket and waited.
"Stand in the door!"
30 seconds later, the red light turned green.
"Go! Go! Go!"
Clyde shuffled his way forward, pushing the clip along the metal wire. He shoved the clip at the jumpmaster and stepped into space an instant after Gil. He counted. 1,000. 2,000. 3,000. He got to 5 and still hadn't felt the jolt of an opening canopy.
"I knew it," he seethed.
But he'd mentally prepared for this. He'd never taken his hand from the reserve pull tab. He yanked it sideways hard. At the last instant, he remembered to lean back to keep his face out of the way. Chaos, noise, and darkness ensued. He waited to crash into the ground. Waited to die. "Will I feel it?" he wondered. "Nah, just like Ollie said. It'll be quick." He felt the snap as his fall arrested painfully. The harness gripped his buttocks and groin unnaturally. "Pain means I'm alive," he thought. Before he had time to look up and evaluate his canopy, he slammed into the ground. His chin punched into his knee and he sprawled onto his back. The reserve chute, along with the tangled mane, fluttered on top of him. His head ached, and he suddenly couldn't breathe. He struggled to free himself from the layers of silk. He finally found a corner and took in a deep breath. His stick was supposed to assault a mock enemy position. He had to get into the fight, but his movements felt sluggish. His head spun, and he tasted blood. Footsteps approached fast. He looked behind woozily. 2 men sprinted toward him, waving flashlights. Clyde struggled to unlatch the parachute. He needed to assemble his M1. Both men slid in beside him. One of them said, "Are you okay, soldier?" Clyde tried to answer, but blood filled his mouth, and he had to spit first. "You must have pulled your reserve in the nick of time. We could see your chute streaming. We thought we'd find a corpse over here." Clyde's jaw hurt, but he managed to say, "I'm okay. I had a feeling that might happen." Another soldier approached, and in the glow from the flashlights, Clyde recognized Gil Hicks. Gil had his M1 at port arms. With his camouflage face paint, he looked like a true warrior. Despite his aching head, Clyde felt immense pride at that moment. Gil took in the scene and said, "Well, I'll be damned, Clyde. You are right." He tipped his helmet back off his forehead and extended his hand. Clyde took it and they shook. Gil said, "By the way, we're paratroopers now. By God!"